morning, good afternoon, good day, everybody. This is Tony. You're listening to Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
Bonjour.
Don't try to get coy with me. No, are you saying that because of our new writer at Half Guarded?
I have, because you brought him up last week, if you remember, on the show.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. I have to say, I've just, at the moment, we've got the European Championships football going on, which I know as an American is going to mean absolutely nothing to you.
I was trying to be polite about it, but yes.
Yeah, but France are on at the moment. I have to say, the French have an absolutely amazing national anthem.
Ooh.
It's absolutely fabulous. You know, he puts ours to shame. If you've ever seen Casablanca, there's a scene on that where they basically sort of sing the national anthem in front of the Nazi Germans, and it's just an amazing scene. But yeah, it's a really rousing national anthem that gets you know. And like I say, it puts "God Save the Queen" to shame. Put it that way, which isn't that hard because our national anthem sucks.
I'm playing a little bit of it. Okay, just trumpet so far, Dazza. When's the cool part coming? Is this not it?
That's not it.
YouTube has failed me for the last time.
Yeah.
Let's try this one. If it's not it, we'll just move on.
Okay.
It sounds like more of the same.
Nope. That's not it.
I put French National Anthem in. That's what's coming up. Go figure. Yeah. I'm sure the French listeners are pulling their hair out.
Yeah. you're living up to a stereotype of Americans that have absolutely no idea about other countries or cultures.
Yeah, suck it, rest of the world.
America.
Dazza, it's pronounced America.
America. Oh, okay.
No, America.
America.
We dropped the A.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's see what we're here to talk today. Okay, admittedly, our first topic is going to be today, as of right now, is September, or not September, I'm getting way ahead of myself. It is June 21st, 2016. That's when we are recording this right now today. And as of yet, it hasn't come down the pipeline yet, but presumably later on today, we're going to get the second to last episode for this season of Game of Thrones?
Yes, the episode is entitled Battle of the Bastards.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the reason I thought we could just do like a recap on the season so far, basically because even though it's not the finale, the second to last episode of Game of Thrones tends to be the most dramatic one. That's where you normally get like your big battle episode or like your big really, really like, you know, massive moment. And then the final episode is almost like an epilogue. So I thought we could basically sort of do a little recap of the, you know, what's been great and what's been, you know, sort of disappointed about the season as a whole.
Correction. Today is June 19th, 2016, as we're recording this.
Okay.
Got a little ahead of myself there.
Yeah. I mean, this season, I mean, full disclosure, I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. I've read the books. I've watched the TV series. I absolutely love it. And, this season's been quite a different one in many ways, basically because with one exception, that being the Jaime Lannister storyline we had last week, where we basically had the siege, against the Blackfisher's castle and everything. All the other storylines, basically, from the books, ended or basically came to a conclusion before this season started. So basically, from this season going on, we're basically being in brand new territory, even if you have read the books. And, you can tell that the season has sort of, the series has changed somewhat. So one of the things is that, traveling around Westeros and the Game of Thrones world has suddenly become a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. Because in previous seasons, if you were basically sort of journeying from one city to another, it would basically be like a road movie. You'll get several episodes of the sort of journey and everything, like, you know. So to, whereas now it seems to be that, you know, they'll set off from King's Landing one episode and they'll be at the wall the next episode, you know. So they've cut, you know, you can see the things have sort of like, you know, moved quicker in that respect. Rather strangely, some of the, so it's one of these things that with Game of Thrones, there's certain storylines which basically just seem, you know, you'll get a little bit of movement and then you think, oh, this is sort of moving on, and then it suddenly becomes stagnant. So for example, the Ice Walker season, which has been going from the very first scene of Game of Thrones, just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. even though it's this big, massive sort of zombie threat, you know, and we had a few episodes where things started, you know, move a little bit. We had the Hodor episode, the Hold the Door, which was so, you know, so sad. I mean, that got everybody, that one.
Yeah.
But it sort of, you know, and you felt, well, you know, things are moving on, and then nothing sort of happened. Same with Arya Stark. You know, she was sort of like, you know, she had this season where she was basically training, and we again seemed to go on for ages, where she was basically training to be like, you know, the faceless assassin sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we've got sort of to the end, and all of a sudden it's sort of, that's really gone nowhere. And now she's sort of basically going back to Winterfell. We had like a revolution in Dawn. And you think, well, this is sort of like going somewhere, because obviously you think Dawn's going to go up against King's Landing for revenge. That seems to have disappeared. So it's the typical Game of Thrones season where you're basically, it's sort of slightly frustrated because you've got all these storylines, and some have sort of moved on, you know, the stuff with Jon Snow. Meeting up with Sansa and everything, and sort of, you know, that sort of, you know, and her, then basically sort of trying to get forces up against the Boltons. That's been a good storyline. But, you know, some have moved fast, some haven't, you know, and then some have, like, you know, moved in insanely quickly. I mean, Daenerys' storyline seems to have moved really fast this season. So, you know, and, you know, tonight we've got this sort of, you know, we expect, you know, the big battle scene. I'm kind of, I don't know about you. I kind of want to see Ramsay Bolton get his.
I think everybody does.
Yeah, but at the same time, I kind of don't want to lose him as a character, because he's such a great villain. But I don't want to see him sort of, you know, get any victories or anything like that. I want to see him basically get skewered and, like, you know, get his head on a spike or something. But, you know, you sort of, you know, you still need your sort of, you know, your villain in there. It's funny, because a few seasons back, you always thought that Joffrey was, like, you know, the big villain you want to see get his. And, you know, Ramsay's like a million times worse than him. It's amazing. But, yeah, I think this is one thing I've got to say about this season, it's been a big disappointment, is Tyrion has hardly anything to do at all. Yeah, you know, and he's in the past, he's become sort of like the star of the series and everything. And he just sort of, this season, he's just sort of, he's basically just been, you know, stuck at the sort of, you know, the Daenerys city and everything. He's had hardly anything to do, and it's a really big shit. I think he's been massively underused. Maybe something big's coming, I don't know. But it just sort of, that one I've been sort of, you know, really disappointed with.
Can't win them all, Dazzle. Got to give you something to look forward to in the future seasons.
Yeah.
I think last night on the Comic Conversations show, but considering the way the shows roll out, we were actually looking up how much it costs to make per episode, and I think it's like $60 million. Now, obviously, doing the math, I'm sure it doesn't cost $60 million per episode, but, you know, per season, that's how much you're looking for per episode. So, you know, get what enjoyment you can out of it, because after a while, I think going forward, aren't the seasons only going to be like 10 episodes?
Yeah, I mean, this is why we don't get that many episodes a season, you know, because it is a really massively expensive one to do. But yeah, and I keep hearing these rumors, but we've basically got two more seasons and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, which sort of, you know, you don't want something like this to go on forever, you know, you basically, you know, you want it to basically sort of end while it's still hot and things. So, you know, so maybe another 2 years of this. But another thing that came out with season, which is the return of the Hound, which I absolutely love, because one of my sort of dream episodes would be just a 1 hour episode of the Hound and the Mountain just hacking each other to bits. You know, just a big, massive battle scene between the two brothers. That would be awesome. That's one thing I would love to see.
Okay. Do you have any more notes on Game of Thrones before you quickly move on?
No, not really. Just sort of, you know, I'm pretty much, that's all I got to say on that.
Yeah, admittedly, I came to the Game of Thrones party way late. In fact, the guys have kind of criticized me before, because I watched the first three episodes of the show. Well, initially I'd watched the first episode and I was like, not for me. My buddy was like, just watch three episodes. If you watch three episodes, then you have my blessings and I'll watch the show. Watch three episodes. Didn't much care for the show. Then through obviously just watching people watching on TV, especially this season, I caught out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, hey, that actually looks pretty cool. So what I decided, and I've done this before with all things, at least Japanese pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, and especially comic books, I just decided to pick up and started watching episodes as they come out. So I think I've watched the last three or four episodes. So I'm still learning the game, but some of the names that you mentioned obviously ring a bell. I've done some research. I'm getting familiar with the show, and it's a pretty good show. It's one of those things to where even my buddies have said, you know, you kind of missed on the good stuff. I'm like, well, we'll see. It may be like a situation with comics and especially everything else where I go back and watch it now that I'm hooked on the current stuff.
You have missed some great stuff.
That's what everybody says.
If you ever go on YouTube, there's videos of people watching certain episodes of Game of Thrones, and there's something called the Red Wedding, which basically...
I'm familiar with what it is. I spoiled myself already.
Yeah, but yeah, there's videos of people, like, you know, because obviously it's one of those things that a lot of people have read the books and a lot of people just watch the TV serials. So people who had read the books and knew this was coming were like filming people, you know, watching the Red Wedding to get their reactions. Because I basically read the books. How I did it, I started reading the books. And after I'd read one book, then I started watching a TV show, which really helped, because in the books, there is so many characters in there. The TV show managed to help me basically sort of put like, names to, you know, faces to names, as it was, you know, so it really helped out the book and everything. Some of the shock, it is one of those TV shows where basically anything can sort of really happen, because all the way through it, they've basically established that they will basically kill anybody off, you know, regardless of what storyline or anything, you know, they'll basically just, you know, do, or how popular a character is, you know, they will do that. So it is really one that's sort of like, you know, a real shocker of a TV show.
Okay. From there, we're going to move to, let's see if this is the right name of the promotions. It's EFN 50?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Obviously, the promotion is EFN. This is their 50th event, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the show is. I've not gone back and checked if they've actually done 50 shows. But basically EFN is the, I think it's the Eurasia, fight network. It's basically based in Russia, I believe. And it's on UFC Fight Pass. And it's a MMA promotion, and it's kind of got a little bit of the pride vibe to it. And what made this show yesterday such a big deal was that Fedor Emelianenko, which I obviously cannot say, was fighting on the show. Now, I have to say, I've watched a few of these shows, and I sort of become kind of a bit of a fan of it, basically because it's got the most extravagant and batshit crazy ring entrances you will ever see. It's like Cirque du Soleil and mixed martial arts.
Is that the promotion? I don't know if it was that or a Brazilian promotion where a guy came out with like Spider-Man and Wolverine and Superman, or am I thinking of something else?
I think I've not seen that. I would have remembered that. basically the fights are basically, you know, pretty much straight. You know, everyone who's in there is like an actual, a mixed martial artist. The fights are straight, are straight. But the entrances, they basically, for a start, they have an entire orchestra, or last night we did at least, a full orchestra. Awesome. And they were playing like...
This is where UFC's dropping the ball.
Well, this is the thing. I've said this for a long time. Is that UFC, their shows have basically looked the same for like years and years. Even the big ones. And I know the sort of, for last year, the UFC show in Vegas, they had the Sinead O'Connor singing an Irish song when Conor McGregor came out. But basically, their shows pretty much all look exactly the same. Now, with this, like I said, they had an orchestra. They had these dancers in this sort of like, you know, weird, like I said, this is where the Cirque du Soleil stuff comes in. They have these sort of like, you know, dancers in these sort of like masks and stuff, like sort of like medieval ball type outfits. Then they had sort of like gymnasts for, you know, sort of flying through the air hanging from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. They had one woman who was basically doing like a dance on this sort of like a chandelier thing. Then they had sort of singers singing like pop songs, but singing with like an opera element. So it was all very like elegant and everything. They also had like a, And they had sort of like these sort of like robot zombie type things in it, all these weird stuff. And then they had this like this woman who was singing, and she was sort of like hanging from the ceiling, and she had like this inflatable spider outfit on.
Awesome.
It was incredible. I mean, it was just sort of, it was, and the fighters themselves, I didn't know any of them, but they kind of, they have that kind of sort of like Russian mob type look to them. You know, they sort of looked how you would sort of how people don't watch mixed martial arts imagine fighters to look like. You know, they were sort of, basically lots of fighters look like Rusev, basically. And we were just sort of having like, you know, these sort of like, you know, just sort of brawls. But yeah, the show was absolutely, you know, I was like intrigued just by the, you know, the actual entrances and everything like that. Cause it was so over the top, and you had sort of like, say, your opera music, you had rap music and stuff. It was just like, but this is like virtually every fighter. It wasn't just like the top fighters. Virtually every fighter on the show had this entrance. Another thing I have to mention before we get to Fedor is they had one of the most amazing commentators commentating on this show. Now, I've seen this guy before, and I'm convinced that basically what this organization, they obviously, because it's on the UFC Fight Network, they have an English guy doing their commentary. They must have like a, you know, obviously a Russian guy doing the commentary of the home thing. But for the Fight Network, they have like obviously an English guy. I'm pretty convinced that they basically don't monitor what he says. They basically just sort of let him do what he says. Because for a start, he has a really sexist attitude in that he's always talking about how he doesn't approve of women fighters, even when there's a women fight going on in the ring.
Wow.
In the cage. Sad. Yeah, you know, so that is, you know. But he basically, he will like cheer on fighters and stuff like that. He was like, because it was obviously a Fedor fan, because he was cheering on Fedor in the fight. It's just, he has to be seen to be heard, to be, you have to hear him to believe him. It's just like totally like unprofessional, but so over the top and enthusiastic and just entertaining in sort of how unprofessional he actually was. You know, apparently, I actually missed this, but apparently he was like in, earlier in the show, he was interviewing a Russian actress and it sounded like he pretty much hit on her.
Good for him.
You know, and I've not seen that bit, but it was just, yeah, amazing the stuff that was coming out of his mouth. Anyway, like I say, we got to the main event, which was Fedor Emelianenko in there. And this fight was just, it was kind of one of these fights that was, it was a bit like the sort of the Dada and
Kimbo
fight a few months ago in the fact that it wasn't a great display of sort of fighting, although it was a lot better than that. It was just sort of something you just couldn't stop watching. And not that it was in a bad way. It was just for the sheer spectacle of the fight. I mean, basically Fedor, you know that he's basically not who he was. He was basically hitting this guy with sort of like clean shots and stuff, which, you know, the old Fedor would have basically, you know, just basically knocked him out. You know, but he still sort of, you know, still powerful and everything. Fedor took an absolute beating in the first round. I mean, really, it's a fight that should have been stopped.
That's why I heard repeatedly. Yes.
Yeah. He started well. He was, you know, landing punches, landing these flurries, and you thought, you know, and the commentator at this time was saying, oh, this is going to be a short night. You know, he's obviously going to knock him out any moment now in office. And then Fedor got dropped, and after that, he basically got pounded on the ground, and there was punch. I mean, the referee should have stopped it. There was punches that were basically knocking Fedor's head, you know, clean back off his neck. There was a couple of times where you thought he must have been knocked out by that punch. And he managed to fight his way up to his feet and he was staggering round the ring. Just basically on like rubber legs. How he was actually managing to stay up all this time, I have absolutely no idea. He was just like, you know, stumbling around like a baby. And how he survived the first round is an absolute miracle. But it was one of these things that you just, although you don't like to see him that way, you couldn't help but admire his sort of, his warrior spirit. You know, but for one thing that he's got, he is still a fighter. And he was, you know, he was still in the fight because, you know, he was like landing shots on the other guy, knees and stuff like that. But you just knew that the old Fedor would have basically knocked this other guy out. The fight, I believe it, incredibly went the distance, somehow. And then the sort of the real shot. But the thing is, the commentator was pretty much saying that Fedor's going to get the decision because he's in Russia. And he won on each card, winning the last two rounds and losing the first one. The thing is, the first round should have been a 10-8. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no question. It was pretty much clear cut. It should have been a 10-8. Why it was given a 10-9, I have no idea. And even that, I mean, I personally thought that he lost the second round as well, although it was very close. But for, you know, but the best really that after that round he could have fought was to get a draw. And he didn't. He won the fight. And it was just, I think even some of the Russians in the crowd were actually sort of like, you know, in shock and booing.
Well,
you know,
look where the event was held.
Well, exactly. You know, it's like there's a in Italy in with boxing. Outside of Italy, there's a saying that if you basically fight an Italian in Italy itself, you need to knock the guy out just to get a draw. And I've seen this on many occasions. The judging is so 100% biased in favor of the sort of, you know, of the home guy, and that's pretty much what we got here. You know, it was basically sort of like, you know, hometown judging. Obviously, sort of, you know, the regulations aren't going to be sort of, you know, as strictly enforced as what you get, like, you know, in America and stuff like that. But it was sort of, it was one of those fights. It was a spectacle and like just sort of, and it was a great fight on sort of, for that. But it was sort of, it had its farcical elements from the fact that the fight should have been stopped and the decision as well. You know, but it was, you know, it's one to, you know, if you have fight passes, you know, and I would recommend some of these shows just for the entrances alone and just for the spectacle. But the, to sit, you know, he still is, you know, a great fighter, and he's still one of these fighters that if he was to go into a UFC, people, you know, there would be, even though he's basically past his best, you know, there would be a massive, you know, curiosity value in seeing him actually fight in America. But yeah, but it was a it was a tremendous show for so many reasons.
I may have to go and buy Fight Pass because I think up until recent my Fight Pass subscription had ran out. I'm like, Fedor fighting in a know nothing Russian MMA promotion. I don't know how badly I need to see this. And I was like, well, Fedor's kind of over the hill. He'll either go out there and beat a tin can, or some no name fighter's going to go out there and wipe the floor with him. I'm like, either way, I don't need to watch this. But after you put it over with the entrances and whatnot, the showmanship, especially when you brought up the orchestra, I was like, I may have to watch this now. Cause that actually does sound pretty cool. In fact, you know what? I found that clip of, the MMA fighter. It's from a Brazilian promotion.
Oh, right. Okay.
Let's see. I very quickly sent that to you. It's from Espira Fighting Championship.
Oh, okay.
And, it's a fighter, and he comes out with, let's see, Spider-Man, Captain America, and Mickey Mouse.
That's awesome. See, this is what UFC's missing with the whole sort of Reebok thing as well. You know, because even with a couple of weeks back, Michael Bisping, he basically made up a Union Jack flag. Based with all the tweets, the good luck tweets that he'd had from people in the UK. Mm-hmm. And Reebok wouldn't let him come out with it. He wanted to basically have it over his shoulders when he came out. And basically it didn't fit in with the Reebok deal. So he had to he couldn't actually bring it out with him.
Good God. That Reebok deal has just been an absolute train wreck on all counts. It's like the fighters are mad about the money. The fans are not cool with it, especially with deals like that. I think you were telling me even at the weigh-ins, they're not allowed to do goofy stuff anymore.
No, but everything has to be authorized. You know, it has to be sort of like, you know, official, even down to the underwear. I think it's got to be sort of like, you know, officially, you know, Reebok deal and stuff like that. They can't sort of, you know, they couldn't do cosplay or anything like that, what you were getting in Victor or anything like that. But, you know, they're simply not allowed. I mean, I think as well, and I've not had this confirmed, but I've noticed it that up to last year, fighters, even under UFC contract, would basically do their own merchandise. You know, they would do their own t-shirts and stuff like that. You know, cause I got some some of my favorite fighters. I got a t-shirt of Beck Rollins and stuff like that. You know, just something you could like buy from them. And they've all disappeared now because they're basically the only things that they can put there.
I thought the deal didn't extend to that far. I think Dana said they can sell and wear all the stuff they want outside the cage, promoting the fight, but once they start doing, like, I guess, weigh-ins, and once they're actually at the event, then they have to wear Reebok stuff. I was under the impression that they could still have sponsors outside of,
Well, I mean, all I've got to say is that, like I say, in the past, I've easily been able to find all this sort of merchandise that they do themselves. And for all the UFC fighters, I can't find any anymore. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but, you know, the stuff that I know was available up to July of last year, I can't find anymore.
Because I desperately want that, that Fedor Trollface shirt. I saw him wearing one when they were doing the, whatever the deals they call before the what's it called? Embedded, or what's the thing that UFC does? It's embedded, right?
Embedded, yes.
Yeah, and he was wearing like this really cool, and it looked like it was made by like a professional sponsor, but it had the nice glossy photo of him doing the troll face, and I was like, I want a shirt of that. I want to wear that, and it's like, I can't find it anywhere.
I just remembered as well, talk about wacky entrances. I mean, this is what, you know, what UFC did in the day. There was a Japanese fighter, and I honestly can't remember his name, but it was quite a few years ago. And him and his sort of corner men, they all came out dressed in this sort of like with afros and sunglasses on and like disco gear. And they all came down to the ring and did this synchronized disco dance. Do you remember this one at all?
I'm trying to remember exactly what it is, because I remember somebody did that gimmick where they came out with the afro, the championship around their waist, and they came out with a woman. I'm trying to see who it was. It was whoever Matt Hughes first beat for the title. So I'm very quickly looking at Matt Hughes' record. So remember, because he did a wacky entrance, and even he commented on his DVD. He was like, he was going out there kind of laughing at the guy underneath his breath.
Yeah, I'll have to do some searching for this at some point, because it was a Japanese fighter, and like I said, there was three of them, and they came all in sync and doing this like this wacky Japanese disco dance, and they were also to I'll have to find out who this was, but I can't. I'm just having a quick look on the internet now.
Carlos, the one I'm thinking of is Carlos Newton.
Carlos Newton, yeah. Carlos Newton. This was a lot later than this. This was, this was in the sort of like, the new era. It was something just on the prelims. But I'll have to try and find this out, because it was just the sort of thing that, fighters can, do when they're having a bit of, fun.
I can understand maybe why a UFC wouldn't want to do something like this, because they're owned by, their television rights are owned by Fox. They have, all the things with Reebok and the clothing and whatnot. And they sort of want to present themselves as sort of a serious product. But with that said, what's Bellator's excuse? They need to go out there and actively be different. And I'm glad that the fighters can go out there where they're sponsors and get the money for that. But with that said, it's like, you can't do this because what? Oh, because of your integrity? The same promotion that put on Kimbo Slice versus Dana 5000 is now going to have integrity?
Yeah.
Speaking of that deal, I just wonder. You see a couple of fighters that have gone from UFC to Bellator, and they'll get sponsor deals. I just wonder how much money in 2016 is left in sponsorship money as far as clothing is concerned. Now, obviously, some of the fighters were upset at the time. I'm sort of turning the clock back a little bit since that Reebok deal sort of went down before we started doing this show. How do you feel overall about that Reebok deal? Because I'm of the opinion of, I think a lot of the fighters don't want to admit it, and they're obviously angling to make more money. But I think what they're paying them seems to be fair, because I can't imagine sponsorship money in 2016 is all that much. Or when did the deal go down? I think it was 2015, 2014?
Yeah, it came, I think the first show was, it's actually about a year today, because the first show that all the new Reebok gear came on was the Las Vegas show. The one with McGregor and Mendez, which was basically sort of 4th of July weekend last year. So it's basically been going for a year now. The thing is, I've heard in interviews, I just get a vibe that that some of the fighters aren't sort of like happy, with the deal. But some, I think some of them probably feel that they can sort of make more money by, selling themselves. I'm sure some of that sort of, you know, doing really well, you know, doing better out of it and stuff like that. I know that there was sort of a concern with at least they know they will get paid with this, where some of the sponsors, you know, they would have to sort of, you know, fight somewhat to basically get the money that they were owed.
You know, I know that too. At least with this, they're not running around trying to chase down sponsors to shake them down for the money. It's, you know where the money's coming from. It's gonna come for sure. And while I'm still of the opinion that this is based on market values. I wouldn't say it was 100% fair, but I don't know. It looks to me it's on the level.
Yeah. I mean, I think you'd have to basically sort of like, you know, ask the fighters, you know, themselves how they feel. I do know one fighter made a point that I think it was something, that a lot of the fighters preferred it when they had the old deal, because they basically got money, like, you know, a little bit of it at a time, and they could sort of, you know, work towards getting something. Whereas with the Reebok deal, they kind of just get sort of like, you know, there's some in advance. I don't know. Maybe you have to fight this. Talk to the fighters in that. I think some of the fighters, I think it depends on how good a promoter they are. I mean, you take something just to, so, okay, it's right. Somebody like, you know, because as I understand it, it's basically the sponsorship deal is done on a fight by fight appearance basis. Mm-hmm. You know, so they'll basically get, you know, if they place on the card, they will basically get, you know, a check for being, you know, on the card. So if they'll get so much for being on Fight Pass, so much for being on, you know, like someone like, say, for like Felice Herring, who hasn't fought for a while. You know, you would, and somebody who like her was sort of like really good at selling herself, she probably would have sort of a bit more, even though she's not high on the card, she'd be, you know, because of sort of like, you know, who she is and being able to market herself and the other stuff that she's got going on, would be able to, you know, get more from sponsors than from what Reebok will give her. You know what I mean? You know, somebody who could sort of, you know, work to basically, you know, sort of, you know, to market themselves, you know, better than other fighters. You know, I don't know. You'd have to ask the fighters.
But at the same time, I'm not super sympathetic. This is going to be hard if we ever want to book a fire in the future. But, you know, they still have the ability to do sponsorship deals outside of the cage. And I don't, especially you brought up Felice Herring. And I'm sure she does tons of sponsorship outside of UFC. So I don't think it's, I kind of sympathize with them. But at the same time, I'm not exactly, I'm not crying a river for them either.
Yeah. I do think it's made UFC a lot less colourful place. I mean, one of the things that it really, you know, last year, because I went to the Fight Expo, and it was a lot duller place for not having all the other brands there, because all the other brands were basically, you know, barred from there. You know, in the past, when you've gone there, you had more variety, so you would have, like, you know, people like, you know, Fight Chick, who would tap out and stuff like that, and they would have their own sort of, like, you know, fighters who were sponsoring, doing appearances. So you could basically, you know, go pretty much anywhere, and you'd be seeing fighters left, right, and center at all the different stalls. Now you're basically, you know, the only place you can actually see, you know, get to sort of, like, do the meet and greet is with basically the UFC's, basically, you know, fighters. And they're basically, and just sort of, you know, you have to basically, you know, you've just got one place where you have to queue up, and you know, so you don't really, even before, you could basically just walk past, even if you weren't going to queue up to see them, you could walk past the stall and actually just at least see the fighters and stuff like that. And you would get sort of fighters who weren't under UFC contracts, who were a bit available to basically, you know, to do autographs and that sort of thing. And now it's just basically is a pretty much, you know, a UFC Reebok deal, you know, the expo. And it is a lot duller place, you know, because of it. And I think as well, the sort of, you know, the cost, you know, I mean, I think one thing I think is with the women fighters, for example. I mean, you see, you know, because we all basically all wearing the same sort of gear, and someone like, for example, Tisha Torres, when she was in Victor, she, you know, she used to wear, like, you know, the little sort of skirt and everything. She would basically have the opportunity to sort of make herself, you know, sort of market herself and just make herself, you know, stand out a little bit more. Now she, you know, she has to basically wear, you know, this same Reebok gear as every other fighter. I think it takes away their creativity and a bit of their individuality,
a little
personally.
Bit. Yeah, but at the same time, they like the idea of them having uniforms, and especially, mm-hmm. I think back in the day, I'm kind of glad to see sponsors like Condom Depot go away, because it's, you know, you'd be there watching it, maybe someone who necessarily doesn't watch UFC is coming by, and it's like, they sort of, they grin at the idea of one of the fighters as a sponsor, Condom Depot, and it's like, you kind of cringe a little bit, but at the same time, it's like, whatever, they gotta make money.
Yeah. But say, the Reebok gear wasn't exactly, particularly great last night for, JoJo's opponent.
So did you see it? No, it's one of those things where I may have to go back after what I've heard happen.
Yeah, it, to be honest, it was kind of, I felt sorry for it. It was Valerie, and I can't pronounce her name, Letourneau. Yeah, she basically had a bit of a malfunction. You didn't see anything.
Oh,
but she was just,
no bias.
Come on, be professional. But it was kind of, you could tell that throughout the fight she was having problems because she kept having to adjust herself and stuff. And to be, you know, I felt sorry for her because when you're in an actual fight, you need to be able to be focused and everything like that. And you could tell she was being distracted by it. And so to, you know, there was an incident. Like I say, you didn't see anything. But obviously, it kind of, you know, it affected her a little bit, and that's something you don't want to see when you're actually, you know, in a fight. And there were quite a few sort of fighters who went to UFC who basically made the point of that their fight gear never malfunctions like that. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Reebok deal, but you know, that's a conversation for another time.
Well, we kind of got it all out right here, there. All right, with that out of the way, let's move on to one of our benchmark bits, our Freight and Slate. For this week, we have the top 10 films, according to the box office receipts, for 1981. All right, let's start the list and let's start the drum roll. All right, at number 10, we have The Four Seasons. Never heard of this film. Number 9, Chariots of Fire. I know nothing about this film other than the song. Number 8, Quest for Fire. Epic name there. Number 7, Cannonball Run. Number 6, Das Boot. Number 5, the comedy classic, Stripes. And following it, very, very, right behind it, another comedy classic, Arthur. Number 3, On Golden Pond. Number 2, I didn't realize how big a deal the James Bond films were, but at number 10, For Your Eyes Only. And for number 10, for the top 10 films, according to box office receipts, for 1981. The classic Harrison Ford film, Raiders of the Lost Ark. All right, Dazza, you know how this works. We've done this a million times by now. What is going to be your rate for these top 10 films for 1981? According to TOKO170.com.
Okay, well, I mean, I got to say this is a really good list. Mm-hmm. You know, there's... Honestly, there's not one that I really sort of think is sort of a bad film. But the one I'm going to rate, and it's a close one, it's between Raids of the Lost Ark, which I'm not going to go for. But what I'm going to go for is Arthur.
I wonder why.
I absolutely love this film. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely hilarious. I think Dudley Moore is just absolutely brilliant in it. You know, he's just an absolutely fabulous film. Him and Liza Minnelli have just got this, and we talked about chemistry with a Woody Allen film a few years when we did this, Woody Allen and Diane Keaton. I think it was Annie Hall we talked about. In Arthur, them two together have just got this absolute chemistry. It's just really weird. They just click together. They just sort of, you know, when they're talking, and a lot of this, I don't know if anything was like ad lib. Mm-hmm. Between them when we're doing the banter, they just played off each other so well. And the film, I mean, this is one of the things I'm not going to try and recreate any of the classic scenes in this film, but the dialogue in this film, I don't think there's a single scene in this film that he's in which isn't funny somewhere. You know, there's one scene where he goes to, which every time I watch it creases me up, where he goes to visit his future father-in-law. And he has to get real drunk, and his future father-in-law is this rich millionaire, but he's basically somebody who's come up from the gutter street, and he's basically known as like an ex-murderer and everything. And it's just hilarious because, Dudley Moore's absolutely scared of this guy so much. And there's like this mooser's head in the library where they meet, and he basically keeps making comments about this moose, like, you know, you must have hated this moose and stuff like that. It's just an absolutely hysterical film. Mm-hmm. And really poignant as well, because there's like the relationship between him and his butler, played by Sir John Gielgud. Just an amazing film. I mean, Sir John Gielgud's absolutely fabulous in it as well. I've got to say as well that they remade this film a couple of years ago with, of all people, Russell Brand, and it was absolutely awful.
Yeah, no surprise there.
Yeah. I absolutely despise that remake. I mean, I don't like Russell Brand anyway. You know, I absolutely hate the guy, but Arthur is just an amazing comedy. I think it's one of the best comedies of all time. And, you know, and I think, you know, if you've not seen it already, give it a go. Cause it is, you know, Dudley Moore was absolutely sensational in this film.
Okay. And for me and mine, obviously, since you passed it up, that gives me the opportunity to pick it. Raiders of the Lost Ark. No surprise there. The absolute Steven Spielberg classic. Look at all these films. Obviously, Arthur was really good. I've heard very good things of Chariots of Fire. I've seen Das Boot, very great film. I love Stripes, but obviously, no disrespect to the other films, but Head and Shoulders, the absolute film classic. I got to go with Raiders of the Lost Ark. All right, Dazza, for what are you going to pick for your slate for 19?
Yeah, to be honest, I've not really got one to slate on this thing. I'm going to pick one. It will be On Golden Pond, basically, because it's a film I watched and I thought was okay, but I just didn't really get, you know, it just kind of didn't sort of appeal to me when I watched it. And it's nothing that's actually massively bad in it. It just wasn't a film that I basically sort of, you know, care for that much. But it's not a film that, like I said, this list, I think this is like a real strong list of films that year. I mean, Four Seasons is basically a film with Alan Alda, which is kind of like a comedy following these, three couples throughout the years and stuff. And that one I really liked. Cannonball Run, I absolutely adored as a kid. I watched that film so many times. I had it on VHS and absolutely loved it. Burt Reynolds at this time, you know, was great. And Das Boot. I've actually never seen the film because I've seen it as a TV series. The film itself, what in the UK, they actually broke down the film into like a three, like 2 hour episodes, if I remember. Mm-hmm. You know, so I sort of so I don't know if the film is kind of like a truncated version of that or if it's just a real long film or not, but I watched a TV show and I thought that was an amazing film. You know, I absolutely loved it. And For Your Eyes Only, I think is a really strong James Bond film. You know, I think that one's it. Sorry?
You actually liked a James Bond film?
I like most James Bond films.
I thought we were working with the premise that you hated most of them. I think even Goldfinger you said you didn't much care for. And that's mostly...
No, I like Goldfinger.
Oh, okay.
I think what it was, when we started this thing, we started it in the 70s. And that's when it was the Roger Moore era.
Ah.
I think the first one we came across actually was Diamonds Are Forever, which I didn't like. So I think a lot from that, from that era, I didn't like, but I'm a big James Bond fan. We ought to do a show on go through the James Bond films at some point.
That would be an absolute pleasure. Yeah. I've seen about maybe half of them, and doing a show would be a great excuse to watch the other half.
I've seen them all. I mean, actually, in the UK, you kind of grew up with James Bond because on Bank Holiday Monday, over here, they'd always show a James Bond film.
Ooh, nice.
You know, and I have to say, I like more than I don't like, but the ones I like, but this one I actually like because it went more down to earth. It went more back to its roots. on this one, where is it got a bit sort of out of hand with Moonraker, you know, James Bond in space and stuff. This one sort of, you know, went down. And also, it was also one of my favorite theme musics as well for a James Bond film.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So, we ought to do a James Bond film. So, you know, so I can show you which ones that the ones I like and which ones I don't.
All right. Just pick a date and I'll do research. I think I've threatened to do research so many times now, but if you tell me when we're going to do the James Bond episode, I'll be sure to do all week. Be watching a James Bond movie.
Yeah, we will do that. Might have to be a long episode because there's a lot of films. So,
well, maybe we can have a special edition.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we definitely. Just do all James Bond films.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. That'd be great.
Okay, from here we're going to move on to the award.
Well, are you having a slate?
No. I was like you. I'm like, some of these films I've never even watched, and some of them, like I said, I reserve the right to slate. Yeah. If a film I don't really like and I see that's on the top 10, I'm be like, I'm going after you. But at the same time, I don't want to force myself to do it. I want to feel, and this may be something I do going forward in the future. If there's too many films where I can't pick a rate either, I'll just be like, or maybe I'll do something like, if it's a two or three way tile, I'll try to pick all three. But no, I don't have enough knowledge of these films, or I don't really. From what I've heard about most of these films, like you said earlier when we first started this is a great year for films, so it's kind of hard for me to pick a slate. Okay, from here we're going to move on to the award portion. The best picture for 1982, to no surprise, Chariots of Fire. Hmm. Okay, and since we started doing this, since we're now knee-deep into the 80s, we are going to be moving on to the Razzies. Sorry, I was doing some research here and I got it pulled up right here, and for the reason why it's called the Raspberry Awards on Wikipedia. I don't know why, but that's what they choose to call it. Let's see.
I'm guessing is it because people blow a raspberry when we watch the film? that's the only thing I can think of.
Nice. All right, let's see if I can very quickly pull this up, because I have last year's, but let's see. Daz, do you have it there in front of you? Oh, wait. I figured out what I did wrong. I clicked on, oh, here we go. The second annual Golden Raspberry Awards. So for Worst Picture, we have the nominees are Tarzan, The Ape-Man.
Okay, just to explain what we do with this one as well. This is one where we have to confess. We read out the,
yes, I forgot about this.
We have to confess if we actually like one of these films on the Razzies. I have a feeling going forward I'm going to confess a lot more than you are. Because I sort of have a thing for like movies that no one else likes. So I have a feeling I might be confessing quite a lot.
Sorry, I'm laughing at what you're saying, but I'm also laughing at a lot of these films that they're showing or that right. They're listing off. Obviously, where I left off, Tarzan, The Ape-Man, The Legend of the Lone Ranger, Heaven's Gate, Endless Love, and Mommy Dearest. Any guesses, since you don't have this in front of you, do you know who won this?
I don't know.
It's Mommy Dearest for Worst Picture for 1982. Now, like we said before, the reason why I didn't explain the Academy Award gimmicks. They always do the awards the year after. So for Best Picture, that it won Chariots of Fire 1982 because they based all the films on 1981. So when they did the Razzies, that's what they did this year as well.
Yeah.
Do we want to do the other categories as well? There's not a, actually there is kind of a lot here. We have.
You can read, if there's any notables that stick out, you can read them out, I guess. But I have to say, there's none of those films that I would confess to liking, because I don't. I got to say, I have never seen Heaven's Gate, because it's basically one of these films that is pretty much regarded as like one of the biggest disasters of a movie of all time. Mm-hmm. Not so much for what actually appears on the screen, but just for being like a really troubled production and like going up massively, massively over budget. But yeah, but I've never actually seen the film, so yeah. But yeah, I've got to admit, those films on there, none of them are ones I'd want to save.
Neither would I. And now I've never seen it, but everybody knows the classic line from the Mommy Dearest film. No more wire hangers. I'm looking at this list. Nothing really jumps out at me. Obviously, you have Worst Actor, Best Actor, Worst Actress, Worst Supporting Actor, Worst Supporting Actress. Nothing's really jumping out at me. I could very quickly send you a link. You could see that you could very quickly look over the list. A lot of the stuff is a little bit flying over my head, but Yeah, I'm not really seeing anything that jumps out at me.
Okay, yeah, I'm just looking through it now. Bruce Dern got a nomination for Worst Actor.
We talked about this last week, but I wonder what hurts more, to be nominated or to win. It's like, I was terrible, but I wasn't the worst. And it's like, if you're being nominated for the Razzies, don't you want to win still?
Okay, I found this fascinating. Gary Coleman got nominated for Worst Actor. What I found
What you talking about, Danza?
Yeah, I'm just amazed that Gary Coleman was actually in a film. I only know him from the Different Strokes and from the John Cena video.
Yeah, the thing is,
it was on an episode of Buck Rogers as well.
Ooh, nice. There's no big takeaways for winners. I see Danny DeVito in Going Ape for Worst Supporting Actor.
Farrah Fawcett in Cannonball won for Worst Supporting Actress. That's not right. She wasn't bad in that.
Well, to be fair, she didn't win the award, so. Worst New Star? That actually is pretty funny. Yeah, Gary Coleman was one of the stars, so maybe that's why you hadn't seen him in other films.
Yeah.
Worst Original Song? No, I'm not seeing anything that really jumps out at me. What the hell's Legend of the Lone Ranger? I keep seeing this on the list.
I was just thinking, I don't remember the
Lone Ranger. Oh god, look at this for one worst musical score. One of the entries. Zorro the Gay Blade.
Oh wow.
I must know more about this film. Oh god. Okay, let's see. The comedy features George Hamilton and a Gold nominated dual role as both Don Diego de la Vega and his gay twin brother Bunny Wigglesworth.
Is this a porn version of Zorro by any chance? Or?
Let's see. Who distributed this film? No, 20th Century Fox. I don't think it is.
Oh, wow.
I think this is still, I mean, obviously this is the 80s, so I imagine just the fact that he's a homosexual, people are like, high comedy.
Hmm. Ronald Reagan got worst career achievement award.
Oh, that's good. But yeah, those are the Razzies for 1982. I'm glad we added this portion of the show. It actually is pretty good, all things considered. Let's see if I could peek ahead. See if I could maybe tease anything for the folks. There's a couple of good nominations here. Something to look forward to. This is another thing. I know it's a portion.
There's a film next week that I am really going to disagree with. But bearing in mind that there's a film. Okay, next week there's a film that they nominated for Worst Picture. Now, bear in mind, I actually saw this. I probably saw this in like 1983 when I was I was a kid at the time. So it probably, I probably loved it a lot more than if I was an adult. But wow. Yeah, there's a film next week that I'm really disagreeing with.
We'll leave it there for now. I don't want to talk too much reveal, but that's something to give people something to look forward to. All right. We're very quickly wrapping this up. Dazza, have you been watching anything as of late since we're talking movies?
I went to the cinema. This week, see a film called, and I'm already in the negative for male guy points or whatever you want to call it. I went to see a film called Me Before You, which was kind of like a romantic drama. Now I have to also give a shout out to a friend of mine called Helena who I went with, because I was talking to her about the show and she asked for a shout out, and so I'm going to give her Helena hi, hope you're well and everything. And we went to see this together the other day. Basically, this was based on a book by Jojo Moyes, and this is a film that my friend Helena basically said, you've got to read this book, it's incredible. And I was kind of a bit dubious about it because it was basically formatted and marketed like something what we call, I don't know if you have the same term in the US, but over here we call it, chick lit, which is basically, it's kind of a genre of books, which are basically, they're romantic, normally romantic novels, but
what is it
with
called?
Chick lit.
I have not heard of this term before. No.
No. Okay. Basically, it sort of started with the, Bridget Jones Diary. books. And it's basically sort of, and it's kind of books which are kind of a little, maybe a bit of a Sex in the City type vibe to them. They're normally romantic comedies, but with sort of like a modern take. So it's basically sort of like, you know, trendy women, you know, that sort of thing. Normally like funny. And it's kind of, there's a lot of snobbery about them, you know, because of that, people sort of, you know, see them as sort of like, you know, a low value type genre, but it's really popular. A lot of them are really good. It's the sort of thing that, you know, you get lots of them each month. So you get some authors that will basically do one a year and the sort of, they're decent sellers in their own right. Me Before You was like a really big bestseller. And it was to me, when I read it, I absolutely loved the book. It had a bit more of an edge to it than most what you would call chick lit. It's basically about a girl who basically goes to work as a nurse for a guy who's basically been paralyzed in an accident, and he's paralyzed from the waist down, from the neck down. And there's sort of kind of a bit of a love interest in there, but the main crux of the story is that he wants to commit euthanasia. Yeah, and he's basically tried to live, and he just doesn't want to live in this sort of situation anymore. And she basically tries to get him to convince him otherwise by basically sort of making his life happier and that sort of thing. And it is a book that was sort of like really, you know, tugged on the heartstrings, and I found really, really moving. And it just sort of like, you know, it was a, you know, for me, it was a really great book. Now the film itself, I liked the film for the most part, and I think I liked it. It was just cool seeing this book that I liked on the screen and everything. And there was some good performance, but the problem to me was that there was a complete miscasting in the main role. And the role of the young girl in it was played by Emily Clarke, who is also Daenerys in the Game of Thrones TV series, and she just. I mean, my friend Helena, she actually whispered to me just as the film was starting, saying, is it me or she overacting every single scene? And she was. She was basically just sort of, she was meant to play this like perky, sort of like lovable girl, which is something I sort of like normally, I find endearing in a film. It's sort of know a character I would sort of like, you know, really like. But she was so smiley and just sort of, you know, so forced perky and so forced adorable that it was just, I just found her really, really annoying. And it was just sort of, it took me out of the film, you know, somewhat. And, but there was some like really, really good stuff in there. It was still sort of like, you know, there was still a few like lumpy in your throat moments in there, particularly towards the end. It's a strange film. It got better the sadder it got and the more moving it got. And there was some, like I said, good performances for his parents. Charles Dance played his the guy's father, and he was great in it. Their performances were great. You know, but the guy in the wheelchair himself was great. But it was just that she was sort of as the focal figure. I still liked it as a film. I'm glad I saw it, but she kind of brought it down somewhat for me. I was not her performance in it was just, a totally, the casting was wrong for her. She couldn't basically pull off, you know, what she was meant to be.
Okay.
But as a film, it is one that I was sort of, you know, it's not for all audiences, but it's basically, it's something that I think, It's a sort of a film that sort of like, you know, the Nicholas Sparks type people like that sort of film will sort of enjoy it, or for people on a date and everything. And I have to say that in the audience, you know, the audience I was with was lots of laughing in the right places and everything. And people, you got a vibe that people are enjoying the film. And I would say for the audience it was set for, you know, it sort of worked on that. It just sort of, you know, for me, her performance just like really brought it down from that.
Okay. Have you read anything as of late? Either novel or graphic novel?
I read the two Star Wars books I read this week. I actually did enjoy them. And those have been sort of winding down quite a bit for me, because I think they're sort of like starting to run out of steam somewhat. But I got a Han Solo one this week, and I enjoyed that one. But that was sort of a good one. And the regular Star Wars thing, comic, I quite enjoyed, because it was basically, it was another one that basically was like Luke on Tatooine as a child. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, which I can't, and it was sort of, you know, the young Obi-Wan in there and everything, which sort of, you know, that one I sort of enjoyed. I thought it was sort of, you know, cause some of them lately have started sort of like, you know, sort of, they seem to be running on ideas. I mean, the third issue of the Poe Dameron one, I was like, I just don't know what that was about at all, with the two giant monsters. I wasn't into that one at all. I think that, and I like the first two issues of that, but this one I didn't sort of, you know, the third one I didn't care for. I also read Civil War issue 2, and I'm not getting into that.
Here's my question. I'm surprised we haven't talked about this. Have you read DC Rebirth yet?
No. I actually did go away with the intention, and it was sold out when I got there. So I've been told they're doing a second print run. So I'll probably, you know, try and paint that off. But I've heard good things about that.
It's very good. I know I host a comic book show as well here on halfguard.com, Comic Conversations. It's, for the most part, a couple of books aren't exactly knocking it out of the park, but so far, nothing has been bad.
Whichever one should really recommend then?
Here's the thing: what they have two number ones. They'll do a rebirth book, which sort of seems it's resetting the continuity to a degree. At least it's setting up the table, and then you'll have an initial first issue. So it depends where you want to come in, but in some instances, there's not really a big difference. But if there's a series I have to recommend. What they're doing with Superman is really great right now. So you can pick up either Superman Rebirth or Action Comics or Superman. They're all good. All three of them are good. Batman really hasn't finding all cylinders quite yet. I know we have Tom King, the writer of Visions, on there, and the Rebirth issue was good, but it read really, really short. And this week, Batman issue 1 came out, and they set some stuff up, but at the same time, that's all they did. They set some stuff up, so there's not really anything to go by. Everything else is just pretty good too. Okay, Titans, if I have to recommend two books, it's all the Superman books and then Titan Rebirth. Those are the two DC books since Rebirth that have been the best so far, that of the lot that if I had to recommend something, it'd be probably those two.
Yeah. I'll give those a go. Like I said, Civil War, it's just, I don't know. It's just not doing it for me at all. It all seems really forced.
Yeah, you know, it's like we're going off the synergy of the film, and yeah, I think a lot of people, especially me, were drag kicking and screaming to this. And I'm reading it, and it's not terrible. I thought it was going to be awful, and I wouldn't be able to stand it. And I thought we were going to have to do a moratorium on Marvel. It's not that bad, but at the same time, it's not that good either. And for Marvel to be having this kind of lackluster time at a point where it's really crucial for them to step up their game, because DC really is, you know, running away with all the momentum.
I mean, I don't know, because I made this point in when I did my piece on the first Civil War, that the whole saga actually benefits if you sort of read a lot of the other issues for it as well. And I've got to admit, I've only read the main series, so I don't know if it's better if you read sort of, you know, but I've got to admit, I had a look at when I was sort of buying it, I had a look at a few of the other tie-ins. I just did a quick read through, and I couldn't see that there was sort of, you know, much in there. So I don't know if, you know, so I don't know if by reading those, that would sort of enhance the, you know, the main series somewhat. And
so far I've read most of the tie-ins, and the tie-ins are even worse, to be honest.
Yeah,
I haven't read any of the tie-ins that have been good so far.
So. Just the whole concept, and it's just like I say, the fact that it's that sort of issue, the drive. See, the first Civil War, at least that was something that you could imagine everyone having to take sides, because it was it was like a storyline that affected everybody. It affected every single superpowered person. So you could imagine that everyone would. This one, I just don't feel the story or the threat or the perceived threat is enough that it would drive everyone to basically think, I have to choose a side. Yeah. You know what I mean? It just feels like something we've cobbled together just to sort of like, you know, divide the, you know, to have sort of superheroes versus superheroes again. It's just sort of, you know, I mean, reading it, I was just sort of, I couldn't really understand why Tony Stark was doing what he was doing. You know what I mean? I just, none of it just sort of like, you know, really got me involved. You would think that this is sort of something that by having this guy who could see into the future and stuff, you'd think it was something that they'd be able to solve with, like, you know, a debate as such, as opposed to basically not something that would drive people to suddenly go to war with each other. I just, and also it's more expensive than regular comics. and this is something strange. It's more expensive than regular comics, this one. And yet with the dialogue and everything, it's a quicker read than all of the others.
Yeah, I know.
Because there's hardly any dialogue in it. It's just sort of, and also, I mean, I know this is Bendis. I know it's, you know, the same old thing. I hate it when you've got people sort of saying things, which is totally out of character.
Out of character,
I mean,
yes. That, I think that was the faulting for the original Civil War, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is one, yeah. I mean, but this one, there's a bit where the Human Torch makes some sort of comment, and the, and one of the Inhumans, it was Crystal, she goes, "Oh, you know," and it's like, she wouldn't say that, because the Inhumans are kind of like a royal family. Mm-hmm. If you had somebody like, say, Miss Marvel saying that, you know, she's young, she's a kid, I could imagine her saying that, but, you know, they kind of have everyone sort of talking, like, sort of like, everyone seems to be like a, everyone seems to be like him, into comedy banter. Everyone seems to have sort of snippy one-liners when we're talking to each other, and talking in this like really sort of like, you know, sort of like young, you know, sort of tech speak type thing. It just sort of drives me nuts when you see people saying things that you just sort of, they wouldn't talk like that. You know, they would talk with a bit more gravitas or something like that. It's like, it's a bit like having like Captain America saying dude or something like that. You know, it just sort of, which we'll get at some point. I don't know. But yeah, I just sort of, you know, just reading it. So it's something I'm sort of like reading just to sort of keep up with, you know, as opposed to sort of thinking like, you know, after the first, wow, I really need to, you know, keep reading this. It's just sort of, it's not doing it for me. I may give it one more issue, and then if it just sort of doesn't do something in there, sort of, you know, I may basically just sort of like skip the whole thing.
That may be the way to go.
Yeah.
All right. Unless there's anything else oh, is there anything you've been working on as late, or anything that you want to plug as far as
something
article?
That's just dropped today. I did a piece which is basically about football hooliganism and my personal theory on how you could basically control it. So that's my thing, because basically, unfortunately, with the European Championships, there's been some trouble with England supporters, and not just England supporters, but Russian supporters as well. And it really is a really ugly part of our nation when it comes to their football. And it is a minority, but unfortunately it's a very destructive minority. It's something that I really hate, you know, so.
Sorry, I'm looking at your article and you have the photo. Have you ever been so angry you pointed at a horse?
That's Coughlin's, but he does the photos. But yeah, I've basically come up with something that I think would, you know, go some way to, you know, solving it.
Wow. I want to say we have something comparable to this, but we really don't, at least as far as our sports are concerned. Like, maybe if a local championship will win the championship, you might have something. I don't want to say. I'm looking at a couple of these pictures, and there's fans in riot, and there's a police in riot gear, and it's like, it never gets this bad over here. But at the same time, you're not dealing with the same thing with our national sports, where it's just cities competing against each other. Where when you have soccer or football, you have nations competing against each other.
Yeah. Well, it happens in the local game as well. You know, you get basically, I think this is one of the problems that you, I don't know if you get it as much in America, you don't have traveling fans. I get that impression, you know, you won't have like football, you know, like have football fans from say, LA traveling all the way to New York because it's, you know, so far. In the UK, it's all the games are sort of like, you know, within, so, you know, you get a large contingent of away fans to all games, and so sort of trouble breaks out. But sadly, a lot of it is sort of organized as well. You know, you'll get sort of like, you know, gangs of football rival teams actually arranging the places to meet up and fight. Yes, you know, it really is. It's something that I just can't explain. you know, to non-English people, because it's just sort of, it seems so like pathetic and bizarre. And it really is, but it's there's so many, you know, factors that sort of, you know, but things that you could sort of relate to. At the end of the day, the thing is that some people are just violent thugs and they just want an excuse to basically, you know, to fight. And this is sadly, you know, they sadly use football as an outlet for that. It's not as bad as what it used to be in this country. The worst thing, it's worst thing it happens when there's an international tournament. And when you've got basically sort of England going into different countries and basically, you know, clashing with French fans or clashing with, in this case, Russian fans and stuff. In the UK nowadays, it's sort of, it's not as bad as it was like when, you know, in the 70s and 80s. I mean, there used to be, when I was a kid, there were certain Saturdays, if, for example, certain teams were coming in to, you know, play my hometown, Barnsley. But you wouldn't go into town that day because you just knew there was going to be like lots of trouble. You know, you were just, and thankfully it's not as bad as what it was, but it's never gone away. It's basically gone away from the ground. So they kind of organize themselves so they can like meet up and clash away from where the police are going to stop them. But it's one of those things that is just sort of so bizarre that you basically, you know, when I've talked to like people from America and stuff about the fact that people fight over football, they just can't get a grasp of why it is, and it shouldn't be.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so that's something to check out as well. Are you running anything as of late, or is that all you have in the pipeline right now?
That's all I've got. I've got a couple of pieces. I'm going to be busy the next couple of weeks, but I've basically got a few. I'm probably going to do a few little pieces as opposed to like a big, you know, sort of like my piece on Civil War. So I've got a couple of ideas, but one of the ideas I've got, I want to do like the, I don't know how many I'll actually do, but basically the top, ass kickings in movies. So basically not so much the top fights, but basically fights where you would basically just get one person just absolutely going to town on another one, like a one sided good old fashioned, not beat up. So that's an idea I've got. Basically, because there's a few like really famous ones which I'm going to have. And also another thing I want to do is basically do like a cult film, sort of top 10. Oh, but no, cult film, well, basically sort of lesser known film, you know, because you get these lists of like sort of the 100 films you must see before you die sort of thing. So I'm going to come up with sort of 10 films that you've probably never heard of, that are really worth checking out. So to like either foreign films or very sort of like cult independent films, which have sort of been forgotten. Basically, we used to have a TV show in this country called Moviedrome, which was basically every week they would basically show you like a really obscure cult classic. And I used to love this because I used to see films on this that I'd never would have come across any other way. So I'm probably going to do a list of that, you know. So they're the kind of things I'll be working on before I do like a really big piece.
Okay, I'm curious to see what films. So it'd be cult classics that maybe people haven't heard about. So something like a Rocky Horror wouldn't necessarily be on that list.
No, these are films that I'm pretty sure most people will not have heard of unless they're really into, like, you know. I mean, I'll just to give an example, there's a film called. I mean, I won't tell you what it's about, but there's a film called Knight Riders. Which means knight as in K-N-I-G-H-T.
Okay.
And it's got a very young Ed Harris in it. But it's basically, I guarantee it's one that most people will not have seen, but it's a film that I sort of, you know, that I found really interesting, like, you know, real life. But it's films like that, or foreign films like A Better Tomorrow, which again is a film that sort of, he has some, it's a film that made Chow Yun-fat. If you know him, the Hong Kong action hero, a big name. So it's not going to be like really, really weird, inaccessible movies. It's movies which are basically the cult movies, but the ones which I think if you sort of watch, you'll find them like, you know, accessible. So they're not going to be a film like The Grateful Dead, documentary or anything like that. So anything really, really weird, or, you know, it's going to be sort of films that people can watch, but it's ones that I guarantee most people won't have actually, you know, seen or heard of.
Like Buckaroo Banzai.
Sorry?
Have you seen the film Buckaroo Banzai?
I've heard of it.
you may want to add it to your list.
Yeah, I have heard of that film, but I've never, I don't think, I don't know where I've heard it. I think I might have heard it on a podcast recently. But
I tried to watch it when I was in high school. It's called The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai and the Eighth Dimension.
Wow.
And we tried to watch like maybe 20 minutes of it, and we like, no. And we flipped through, and I'm like, this movie makes less sense the more we flip through. That may be something you want to investigate, or we could do a review here.
Yeah. I may have to check, because I've heard about that recently. I listen to a lot of cult movie podcasts as well, so maybe I've heard it on that recently.
see if I can really quickly look at the cast on this, because it's kind of a big deal. Let's see who's on this as we wrap this up. John Lithgow is on this. Jeff Goldblum's on this. Christopher Lloyd is in this. Yeah, to me, this is probably what you're looking for as far as a cult classic. But the fact that I even brought a film that you didn't even know. All right, I think it's going to do it for this week's show, Daz, unless there's anything you want to talk about very quickly before we wrap this up.
No, I'm pretty much done.
All right, so from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.
Bye.